Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're tuned in to another episode of Real College Podcast, Quarantine Edition, and I'm your host, Casey McCabe. Much has happened in the Twin Cities since our last regular episode. Here at RCP, we want to express the love that we feel for our community and to let you know that we're still here at your side. Although the future remains uncertain, as your go-to arts and culture podcast, we have yet again brought you fresh stories straight from the heart of the Twin Cities. In this episode of Real College Podcast Quarantine Edition, we have words with local up-and-coming hip-hop artists, an investigation into local mask-making, a brush with Minnesota ghosts and ghouls, and a look back on what makes us all beautiful. Be sure to stick around. During the past few weeks, I have ventured outside of my house to spend time with friends and family, while sadly remaining 6 feet apart. During one of these excursions, I met up with my good friend Jay Washington. Jay has been a musician and promoter for as long as I have known him, and I was eager to hear about how his work and creative process has been impacted by the pandemic.
It has been hard with the coronavirus starting because, you know, you can't get out there and do live shows. That's something that I used to really like to do. I like to go do live concerts. I used to play with this little band. But as the coronavirus started, I was looking on Instagram and I seen this dude. His name's Einar Banks. He was doing a little ukulele jug with Polo G. And, you know, the blend was just, you know, it was different type of music creativity, you know, that had never been heard before. You know, it's like mixing, you know, some instrument with rap instead of like, you know, like a beat with the rap. You know, it's interesting. It's different. And I was like, you know what, you know, my homies rap, you know, that's all I love is rap music. So I was like, shoot, I play guitar, why don't I might as well hop on that too. After that, we decided, you know, just to get together, see what we could do. And then we started blending our music interests together, rap and guitar, and like kind of like, you know, like an indie perspective, you know, it comes to like a beautiful blend. So we decided to make some videos just like Einar Banks and post those on Instagram, see what we could do. When we started going together to do it, like it was a lot different. Like it's a lot different sounding. We made our own sound with this. So, you know, it's our own type of music.
After talking to Jay about his new sound, he told me what the future looks like for him and others if the pandemic was to last.
Really, for me, the coronavirus did kind of do me a blessing and gave me that ability to just use social media to my advantage. If the coronavirus did happen to stay, then I would never give up. Of course, I would still use social media to my advantage, and I would use my connections to my advantage, you know, get my music on YouTube, get my music on you know, Spotify, Apple Music, all platforms for everyone to hear. I'd use technology to my advantage in that case.
Later in the day, Jay went on to show me some videos and other content he had been working on with a rap trio signed to the local Life Forever label. The group is comprised of Junie B, Two Tone, and Smooth Machiavelli. Here are their stories.
So my name is Junie B. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota. I rep the 612. That's my home. That's where I grew up. I live here for majority of my life. Growing up, I lived in many states, but been here ever since the third grade. But I lived in Philly before. I lived in Ohio, Iowa, North Dakota. My family always moving around, but I always had a love and a passion for music at a young age. I remember in elementary school, my teacher would always tell me being like the school choir or being a school play, and I never want to do stuff like that. But I love rap music, so like for the talent show, like I always sign up and do a rap and I sing and stuff like that. So I always had a love and passion for music, but I never get serious until a year ago.
On Two Tone and Minneapolis, Minnesota. Grew up really in like Baltimore, Maryland. Came here when I was like 6. Been here since. And then like really cool vibe. My first time rapping was like junior year. I really started taking this year like senior year kind of, because like senior year, me and my cousin had made a song, and that's how they had played it at our prom. And I was like rocking with that. Everybody was like saying how like we had the sound, and like so that's how I started taking that like motivation.
I'm versatile. I don't think I'm like most rappers out here, because like, you know, most rappers just gonna look for that one sound. They either gonna rap or they either gonna look for like drill music or trap, like just rap one type of style. Like, I want to do everything. I want to try all types of styles.
My name is Smooth Machiavelli. I'm an up-and-coming artist out of Minnesota. I was born in Texas, raised in New Jersey. I've been living in Minnesota for about 10 years now. I definitely became a product of my environment, you feel me? I soak in everything that I saw around me. I've been in many situations, you feel me? So there's not really too much cap in my rap, you feel me? But I'm a very versatile artist. I sing, I rap. I feel like I could adapt to any style. Don't know any beat. I'll definitely go crazy on to have one of the most notable verses. I started making music towards the end of my senior year of high school. I really always loved music. I always knew I had a good singing voice, but I never like wanted to pursue singing. I always wanted to be a producer. People say I have a good way with words. It all came together.
During our interview, Junie B explained how he sees the Minneapolis music scene.
So, like, with Minneapolis and the whole music stuff, like, because Minnesota don't have, like, a big market for, like, art and stuff like that. We just really trying to do our own way. We have, you know, a few big artists. We got, like, Young Gravy. We got Lil James. We got Nimmick Revenue. We got, you know, they say Lizzo, she's from Houston, but she spent a lot of her years here in Minnesota and Minneapolis. She even tuned in with Prince, too. So, like, with that, Minnesota don't have, like, a big, like, you know, market with music. So, we just all trying to make it out. So, I feel like just, like, a crab in the barrel mentality where everybody just trying to make it. I feel like right now, like, I ain't never seen music this big in Minnesota before. So, like, that's the big thing right now that's going on in Minneapolis. So, like, everybody's trying to do this little music wave. And I really rock with it because we really got some talent. So, yeah, I feel like Minnesota's on a wave soon and on a come up.
The trio all roughly began their professional music careers at the same time, the end of their senior year of high school. Due to this fact, the three only got roughly 6 months under their belts before the coronavirus hit. Smooth Machiavelli explained how the trio used this potential speed bump to their advantage.
Coronavirus, it was like a curse and it's a blessing. It's a blessing in disguise. I feel like with the coronavirus, most of the people in the house still, so everybody's on their phone. What else can you do? Everybody's on social media, so we're trying to use that to our advantage because we had a lot of music in the vault, so we're like, perfect time to drop videos, drop songs. Everyone's on their phone. Everybody looking for something to do, everybody looking for something to listen to, so we're like, why not grab their attention while it's all on their phone?
Although the pandemic has forced artists to take shelter just like the rest of us, according to Two Tone, the trio still has big plans.
Like, if Corona keeps going on and stuff like that, obviously, we're not going to let that, like, stop us. Like, right now, we got a video going to come out. Me, my boy June, Smooth Machiavelli, we got this video coming out and everything. We're going to put that on Say Cheese. Everything like that, shot with Minnesota Cold TV. So we really just gonna keep applying pressure. Like, I'm gonna keep applying the pressure. And then, like, if I'm going to the studio, I have a lot of songs right now, like, that's unreleased. So it's like, I could drop some songs. I could even drop an EP or a tape. I really want to probably just drop, like, a bunch of songs that we had saved, that we're saving and stuff, just start dropping them, you know, so the fans don't let up, because you don't want your fan base to die down. We're going to start doing shows. We're thinking about taking a tour, like getting our music heard at different states. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of pressure applied. If this stuff lets up, like, it'll be a great thing.
To hear more from Smooth Machiavelli, Two Tone, and Junie B, feel free to follow them on social media at smooth.machiavelli, official2tone_, and official Junie B. To find them on all streaming platforms, search SMOOVEMACKIVELI for Smooth Machiavelli, the number 2, TONE for Two Tone, and Junie B is JUNEY space B. Reporting for Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Casey McCabe.
We got 20s and them 45s and glizzy clips to see through. I know all my brothers down the ride, no matter what's the issue. Told my brothers, if you snake me, then I might as well just blick you. I've been living in a cold, my heart built just like an igloo. If they book me for a show, you know we rocking out the venue.
Both locally and nationwide, people have been making efforts to do what they can to combat the coronavirus. In Minneapolis, this has taken the form of manufacturing face masks. Reporter Tosin Fasimo has more.
As the pandemic continues, people have found innovative ways to keep themselves safe. One method involves the creation of handmade cloth masks. These have been promoted by the CDC as a way to slow the spread of COVID-19 because they cover the nose and mouth, two areas from which the virus can leave the body. As cloth masks become increasingly prevalent, so has the sale of fabric. To discuss the impact on a local business, I spoke to Katie Koster, owner of Diggs, a Minneapolis fabric store.
I got super, super busy. I was selling fabric like a crazy woman. It was really chaotic because I was getting messages through my personal Facebook, through Diggs Facebook, through personal Instagram, through Diggs Instagram. Some people somehow got my personal phone. Like, so I was getting text messages on my personal phone emails, which are like to juggle all the different ways, but it worked.
I asked her about what questions customers brought in regards to creating masks.
A lot of people didn't, you know, it's so new to everybody. Not people needed direction on how much they needed or how much a quarter yard would make, how much a half yard would make. A lot of people wanted elastic, which we ran out of. Like I had a spool of quarter inch elastic maybe for the first 2 days, and then it was gone. I think it was a hospital in Ohio put out the first pattern. And when that first announcement came out, I offered a couple free kits that I gave the pattern out with. And then I teamed up with United Healthcare. They paid for me, or they paid for 50 kits to hand out to people, and those had patterns.
With the influx of customers, Katie saw an increase in business.
I had a few people who were buying a ton of fabric for like all these projects that they'd been sitting on forever, and now they had the time to do it. I also noticed a lot of people who were coming in to get fabric would kind of wander around real slowly around like my gift area just because they hadn't been shopping. And so they were just really taking their time just because they were bored and wanted something to do, see something new.
I asked Katie how her business competed with larger chain stores as the demand for fabric increased.
I would say Joann Fabrics kind of is always a competitor, but I know that a lot of my customers got frustrated trying to shop with them. Their website was, I think, hard to navigate. They were out of a lot of stuff. They had to wait for delivery, where if they came to me, they would get it the day they called. So I think people who were shopping, tried to shop at Joann's during this, I think I may have gained customers through that because I was a better experience because I'm smaller.
As we spoke, I thought about my own cloth mask. I actually didn't buy it or make it myself. A friend of mine had posted some free masks on their Instagram story, so I swiped up to ask for one.
I mean, I had been thinking about it for a while, and it just felt like natural to me because I was already sewing. So I just felt like it was important for me to do what I could, you know, what I can for the people around me.
That's Jean Balestri, the friend who made me a mask. I asked them to walk me through the process of making the masks.
Definitely, like, going through, like, the fabric scraps that I have and, like, the fabric that I have and finding what is, like, the best combination of, like, breathable but also, like, thick, if that makes sense. Like, it has to be, like, dense enough that water particles aren't going to go through. But, like, for example, the mask that I made for myself, I chose the pattern of the fabric over the functionality, and it gets really hot when I wear it. But then for other ones that I made, I used like lighter fabric. So definitely like the type of fabric is important when I'm choosing. And then it's like pretty easy from there. I just printed off a design from the internet. You just cut them, put it, and then like pattern match. I like to like make the inside pattern, the outside pattern go together, which doesn't really matter because no one really sees the inside, and then you just sew them together.
As our conversation progressed, we spoke about their decision to give out the masks for free.
Like, I made them for free. I think people originally thought that I was, like, selling them, but, like, I just had the fabric. I have only bought, the hair binders, and I thought it would be, like, messed up to profit off of the fact that we're literally in a pandemic and, like, turn like protective measures into an aesthetic. In other places, it's been like a part of the culture and stuff like that to wear face masks, but that's like not really that big of a thing here, and I wasn't trying to like monopolize on that shift.
During my interview with Katie, she viewed the cultural shift toward wearing masks as something that may continue for a long time. She also explained her sales during the pandemic as a reflection of a change in buyers' attitudes.
I think there's going to be a stronger want to shop local because we're seeing our communities and our neighborhoods decline, you know, restaurants closing and with the things shutting, I think there'll be a even larger focus on shopping local.
As shown by the impact on local businesses, the pandemic has changed everything about daily life, from the products we buy to what we wear on our faces. For Real College Podcast, I'm Tosin Fasimo.
In this segment from the RCP Vault, reporter Gillian Trudeau speaks with local paranormal enthusiasts and takes us on a journey through Minnesota's ghoulish history.
I've been pushed, hit, slapped, scratched, but this was, you get super sensitive. Just all kinds of things are insane to start happening. Out of body experience. Based on what he did tell me, I think he believes it was some kind of a demonic. And he told me that it scared him to death when he saw it. His uncle just told him, just stand back, grab a pitchfork. And it burst into smoke and was gone.
I found you. There's a website that has all like the listing of all the paranormal groups and societies in Minnesota, and yours is on there with the link, but the link goes to nowhere.
Because people will find you if they need you. That's my experience.
Mike Sweeney, former founder of the Minnesota True Seekers Paranormal Group, immediately returned my email, agreeing to meet and talk with me about his paranormal experiences. However, he had his requirements. He made it very clear that he doesn't agree to do interviews often, if at all, because he is
completely anti-exploitation.
And he insisted that I meet with him alone. So I, a 5'2 petite girl, replied, absolutely, what day works for you? I sat at a local, very public library waiting for Sweeney's arrival. An older, weathered man in worn-out jeans, a plain long-sleeved shirt, and a withdrawn expression approached me in the corner of the library. After a timid handshake, we began small talk, and then he became more comfortable.
I have a background, 26 years in law enforcement, 11 of that is classified. I was deployed to a federal joint task force back in the 80s. What I'm getting at is some of the things we did could never be revealed because they were beyond the scope of the Constitution. That's all I can say. So some of the stuff I did was pretty badass.
His fearlessness hasn't changed. Sweeney and his wife, Lily, founded their paranormal group in 2010. With 6 active members within their team, they receive multiple cases at a time where lead investigators address them and pass it on to the case managers, which were the Sweeneys. They then would progress to visiting the residents' homes.
I'd bring a recorder and maybe an EMF meter.
Do a walkthrough of the house while interviewing the occupants.
At the same time, I'm looking for feelings because I have sensitivities for that.
Sweeney would replay the recorder to see if he was able to hear anything unusual.
Many times I did.
Which would then lead to an immediate formal investigation, including the entire group.
I couldn't get everybody together for a month, and I'm like, that's not acceptable. You know, you need to either be in this or out of it. And that ultimately became a problem, which is why I disbanded the group.
However, that wasn't the only reason for discontinuing Minnesota True Seekers Paranormal Group. Lily's health was digressing. She was diagnosed with MS 5 years ago.
You need to have a real inner strength, and if you're weakened at all medically or emotionally in any way, you can be in some real trouble.
Real trouble can be physically, emotionally, and mentally damaging in this field of work, especially when exposed during a formal investigation. A standard formal investigation typically is when the occupants leave and the team takes over the house.
Based on the preliminary investigation, we'll determine where to put cameras up, what the hot spots are, where their claims of activity are, and then we work the house. We use the SE on TV equipment, the EMF meters, ghost boxes, recorders, and all that equipment, and we'll start setting up about 8. We'll get started about 10.
Typically, each group has or knows someone who will perform a cleansing to rid a space of unwanted spirits, or a group member simply commands a spirit to leave and the activity will stop. Temporarily.
And wrap it up usually 4 or 5 in the morning.
Sweeney makes it clear that he is not a ghostbuster, nor is anyone for that matter.
I'm able to make some persuasions and calm things down, get some relief temporarily, but I can't guarantee you, nor can anyone else. And if they do, find someone else, because they're lying. It's stronger than our state of being.
Sweeney continues to work in the paranormal, but does it alone. Without his website or team, he leaves it to the clients to reach out to him when they need help. When I asked how many cases he receives on average, he told me that numbers were never a consideration as I wasn't in competition, in business, or trying to build a reputation. However, 80% of the paranormal cases Sweeney has received over the years have been naturally explained. This means he was able to conclude that the case was not a haunting, but rather a critter in the attic, electrical issues, house structural issues, sleep paralysis, or something else. The remaining 20% is hard to explain.
Middle of the night, the daughter of the mother-daughter pair was telling her mom to quit kicking the air mattress or quit moving or something, and that woke me up. I turned on the flashlight just to see the air mattress flip and roll them both off of it. Needless to say, we didn't sleep the rest of the night.
A ghost, spirit, soul, or energy, the paranormal has long been acknowledged and attempted to be explained. In the 19th century, ghost stories began to prosper and disperse worldwide. This could be due to the choice of gas lamps as lighting, creating hallucinations by the carbon monoxide emission, the increasing use of Morse code giving people the illusion that if you are able to communicate with people in another country, it wouldn't be a far leap to say you can communicate with the dead, or the economic change.
Most of the time that we think about ghost stories, especially in the late 19th century, I think that they belong to like this kind of high status, high class kind of privilege.
Melissa Cundiff, a visiting assistant English professor at Macalester College, gives me some insight on ghost stories in writing and how the genre is able to evoke many emotions, not just fear.
As a writer, you can kind of enact like this, you know, the relationship. And it doesn't have to be spooky and creepy and the, you know, it can be like just ultimately very, very sad.
In a non-literal sense, we are able to understand these emotions we feel through this genre based off our own experiences. Have you ever heard of the phrase, haunted by your past?
These like fragments of your life are being conjured and then brought into the present moment. And so in a way, like that's a very natural kind of vehicle or whatever of kind of ghostly encounter.
Although the horror genre was flourishing in the 19th century, people didn't necessarily believe in ghosts within our realm, but instead within ourselves. However, throughout time, society started shifting towards believing in the physical presence of spirits rather than internalizing them. Sweeney has had many experiences with paranormal physical forms.
So the jars were on the floor broken, and there's this powdered soap is all over that part of the basement.
His mother began to accuse him.
I said, I didn't do that. And she said, well, who else did it? I didn't do it. You know, it had to be you. And so we're arguing. I said, well, it wasn't me. And she goes, well, there's your footprints. They're like this big.
He measures out about the length of a pencil with his hands.
You know, my feet were bigger. Well, they walked to the wall and stopped and didn't come back.
In 2012, out of 1,000 people, 45% said they believe that the dead are able to come back as ghosts or spirits, according to a HuffPost YouGov poll. The number of believers increased by 16% from 2009, from a Pew Research Center survey. If the trend stays true, there would be approximately 81% of paranormal believers in the world today. Sweeney has dealt with a magnitude of paranormal cases throughout his time as a paranormal investigator. During one of his group trips, they visited a rundown schoolhouse in Farrar, Iowa, where he experienced something profound.
I called it out mentally. Do something. Don't be such a wuss. I remember flying through the air, my back hitting the wall, landed on the floor, and I don't remember anything until I was in that safe room and the group was praying over me.
Sweeney experienced something completely unnatural that's hard to find an explanation for. So why do people come to the conclusion that their experience was a paranormal one?
I guess I hope that ghosts are real because I hope that there's, I guess my best hope is that there's like some sort of afterlife.
We have grown up on ghost stories and the horror genre. Some find it entertaining, some find it terrifying, some are simply non-believers. Why people believe in the supernatural is entirely dependent on that individual's belief system.
It's like this weird comfort, and then we like to like twist and complicate that comfort into something that could be like, you know, violent or scary, or I think that people just like to be scared as long as they know that it's not real.
At least we convince ourselves it's not real.
So that's my theory on a lot of this, that it's interdimensional. It's not necessarily unnatural. It just is for us here in this existence.
Before we end the episode, we will hear from Gillian again in another segment from the RCP Vault. This time, she took to the streets to find out what makes us all beautiful.
Would you possibly answer a question for me?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, awesome. Okay. So, what makes you beautiful?
I think just, like, staying true to yourself and, like, never, like, straying away from that makes me personally beautiful.
What makes you beautiful?
So, I guess when I think about when I, like, feel the most beautiful, like the thought that comes into my head is that I've done some amazing things in my life. I have 2 kids. I've been able to travel a lot. I am almost capable of doing any project that I want to. I'm redoing my kitchen right now and I'm building cabinets. I sew all my own clothes, so like almost anything I put my mind to, I can do it.
What makes you beautiful?
What makes me beautiful?
Yeah.
When I see, when you see your heart is clean, yeah.
It's an easy question. What makes you beautiful?
Jesus.
What makes you beautiful?
Oh. In the morning when I get up and I see that the house isn't destroyed by the grandchildren, that's one thing. And I like to take my afternoon nap now that I'm retired and trying new recipes. There's a lot of things that make me happy.
What makes you beautiful?
What makes me beautiful? Since I'm 87 years old, some days it doesn't feel like there's any way to be beautiful at all. But happiness makes me beautiful, I guess.
That's all for this episode of RCP. Stay strong, Minnesota. We hope you stay safe, healthy, and connected. Signing off for Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Casey McCabe.